When I was at school, I studied many things, but one of the things that I enjoyed studying the most was history. And when I talk to people about that, some people are very supportive of that, and they agree with history, and they always enjoyed studying history themselves. But I find that those who do not like studying history really didn't like studying history. They found it boring, or they found it repetitious. They found it typically just a rote memorization of facts, that there was no real enjoyment to be had just memorizing things. Well, I would agree with that. Good history is not just the memorization of certain facts, just reading over and over again the same things and committing those to memory. True history is looking at stories, is looking at entire civilizations, looking at individuals, looking at what their contribution was to the history of the earth. I believe the Bible contains a lot of good history, where we can look at individuals and kingdoms, and we can look at their entire stories and take a step back, maybe from just reading individual parts, and look at their life as a whole and learn some valuable things. When we read in the United Kingdom of King David, King David's one that I think we do tend to study his entire life. We look at the good he did, at the wrong he did, and we judge him for this, and we see that he was a man after God's own heart. David is an inspirational figure to study. But there's a lot of other figures in David's life that we don't tend to look at quite as much. Now, there's those we certainly do. We look at the sin with Bathsheba. We look at his son, Solomon. We look at his predecessor, Saul. But there's characters in David's kingdom that I think we could learn a lot from that we don't always study. Recently, as I've been looking through David's life, one of the ones that jumped out to me was Joab. This lesson's going to be a little bit different from some of the ones that I've preached previously. I'd like to kind of stick true to what I'm saying, and I'd like to look at the entirety of the life of Joab. So what we're going to do, go ahead and turn, if you will, to 1 Chronicles chapter 2. We're going to do a little bit of introduction real quick to kind of introduce ourselves to who Joab is. But then after that, I really want us to just read what the Bible has to say about Joab. So I'm going to be offering very little commentary. We will read these sections of the Bible that mention Joab, that show his life. We'll read them. I'll give some brief summary statements. I'm going to assume we're familiar with most of these stories. So we'll read the part that Job himself is associated with. We'll offer some comments on that and then go to the next section. And after we've finished reading the entirety of the life of Joab, then we'll make some comments. I think there's some lessons that are going to be evident to us that we can draw from it. So first off, who is Joab? Well, 1 Chronicles 2, verse 15 and 16. This is talking about the genealogy of David. And so it's going through, and the first part of Chronicles is all these genealogies that most of the time we don't really like studying. We don't like reading them because they're just a bunch of names. But hidden in these lists of names is a lot of interesting information. And so in verse 15, it says, Ozem the sixth, talking about the sons of Jesse, it says, Ozem the sixth, David the seventh. And their sisters were Zeruiah and Abigail. And the three sons of Zeruiah were Abishai, Joab, and Asahel. So he is the son of Zeruiah, and this is often how we're going to see Joab described. Typically, you see, you know, what the name of the father is. In this case, he's associated with the more famous of his parents, which is Zeruiah, who's David's sister. Until I looked into this, I actually not made this connection, but this makes Joab actually David's nephew. But from what we're going to see, it appears that Joab was closer to being contemporaries in age with King David. So we can probably assume that Zeruiah was older than David. We know that David was the youngest brother. We can probably assume that he was also the youngest child in general. And so Joab appears to have been relatively contemporary with King David in his age. He's going to start as a captain in David's armies. We know that his brothers, specifically Abishai, were already with David during Saul's reign by 1 Samuel 26. It appears as if the sons of Zeruiah were kind of a unit. All three of these brothers were with David most of their lives. And so it seems as if Joab was with David relatively early on in his life. And so with this context, let's go ahead and start reading about the life of Joab. The first one we're going to see him in is in the civil war with Ish-bosheth. Turn, if you will, to 2 Samuel, and we'll be spending the majority of our time in 2 Samuel. And so 2 Samuel chapter 2, to set the context, we know this is after Saul has been slain by the Philistines. Jonathan and his other sons have been slain. The last son left of Saul is this man Ishbosheth, which is a fun name to say, Ishbosheth. So he's the last son of Saul, and so he tries to claim the kingship of the kingdom. And so the tribes of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, follow after Ishbosheth. The two southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin follow after after David. So there's civil war, and so we read in 2 Samuel chapter 2, starting in verse 12. Now Abner the son of Ner went out from Menahem to Gibeon with the servants of Ishbosheth the son of Saul. And Joab the son of Zeruiah and the servants of David went out and met them by the pool of Gibeon. And they sat down, one on the other side and one on the other. Then Abner said to Joab, "Now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." So they arose and went over by count, 12 for Benjamin and Ishbosheth the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. Each one of them seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side, so they fell down together. Therefore that place was called Helkath Hazurim, which is in Gibeon. That day the battle was very severe, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. Now the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab and Abishai and Asahel. And Asahel was as swift-footed as one of the gazelles which is in the field. Asahel pursued Abner and did not turn to the right or to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, "Is that you, Asahel?" And he answered, "It is I." So Abner said to him, "Turn to your right or to your left, and take hold of one of the young men for yourself, and take for yourself his spoil." But Asahel was not willing to turn aside from following him. Abner repeated again to Asahel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of the spear, so that the spear came out at his back. And he fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Asahel had fallen and died stood still. But Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. And when the sun was going down, they came to the hill of Ammah, which is in front of Gaia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. The sons of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became one band, and they stood on the top of a certain hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the end? How long will you refrain from telling the people to turn back from following their brothers?" Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely then the people would have gone away in the morning, each from following his brother." So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people halted and pursued Israel no longer, nor did they continue to fight any more. Abner and his men then went through the Arabah all that night, so that they crossed the Jordan, walked out morning, and came to Mahanaim. And then Joab returned from following Abner. When he had gathered all the people together, 19 of David's servants beside Asahel were missing. But the servants of David had struck down many of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 men died. And they took up Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. Then Joab and his men went all night until the day dawned at Hebron. Abner, who's a cousin of Saul and figures prominently earlier in the text in 1 Samuel, is a cousin of Saul and had been previously the commander of Saul's forces. So now he is taken and he has served the son, and he is now the commander of Ishbosheth's forces. So there's a terrible battle, and there's first this ritual slaying of the 12 men kill each other, and then after that the battle commences. And it's a terrible battle, and Joab's brother Asahel pursues Abner in the aftermath. Abner tries to avoid slaying Asahel, but is forced to kill him. Abner tries to make peace with Joab, but Joab blames Abner for the battle. And it's interesting, I think we'll see throughout the passage, that Abner's words here are interesting, that he says, "Do you not know that the sword will make bitter in the end?" I think it's an important phrase for us to keep in mind. Let's keep going into 2 Samuel chapter 3. And so 2 Samuel chapter 3, Abner has been insulted by Ishbosheth. There's an issue with one of Saul's concubines, and so Abner is insulted by Ishbosheth, and so he defects over to David's side and promises to bring all of Israel. Let's read in verse 24 of this passage. "Then Joab came to the king and said, 'What have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why then have you sent him away, and he is already gone? You know Abner the son of Ner, that he came to deceive you and to learn of your going out and coming in and to find out all that you are doing.' When Joab came out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sirah, but David did not know it. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the middle of the gate to speak with him privately. And there he struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Asahel, his brother. Afterward, when David heard it, he said, 'I and my kingdom are innocent before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it fall on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and may there not fail from the house of Joab one who has a discharge or who is a leper or who takes hold of distaff or who falls by the sword or who lacks bread.' So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death at the Battle of Gibeon. David accepts this offer, and Joab has previously been out raiding, has been fighting for David. And so he comes back from this raid and is absolutely outraged that David has accepted his brother's murderer into his ranks. And so he summons Abner and he murders him in cold blood. David washes his hands of the affair, and this is the last we have mentioned of Abner for a while. Ish-bosheth ends up being betrayed by two of his own servants, so they kill Ish-bosheth to try to curry favor with David. David ends up killing those two servants, but Israel now has no king. And so Israel comes, and they join with David. And so turn, if you will, to 1 Chronicles chapter 11. David is made king over all of Israel at Hebron. And so he is king of the 12 tribes, and his first act is found here in chapter 11. And so starting back up, I guess, to verse 4. It says in 1 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 4, "Then David and all Israel went to Jerusalem, that is Jebus, and the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, were there. The inhabitants of Jebus said to David, 'You shall not enter here.' Nevertheless, David captured the stronghold of Zion, that is the city of David. Now David had said, 'Whoever strikes down a Jebusite first shall be chief and commander.' Joab the son of Zeruiah went up first, so he became chief." So he goes, and David goes to undertake the siege of the Jebusites, tries to take back the capital city of Jerusalem, and offers the role of his chief to whoever is brave enough to go up first. Joab leads the charge to capture the city of Jerusalem and is named chief and commander of all the armies. A brief side note here. We read in several passages the list of the mighty men of David, these incredible warriors who performed feats of just incredible valor and skill. Abishai and Asahel are actually both listed among the mighty men, but Joab is never listed as one of the mighty men. I think that's an interesting consideration that he was not apparently as skilled a warrior as his brothers, but he certainly does not lack for bravery. And so Joab is named the chief and commander, and so he's going to be David's commander through most of his entire reign. So turn back, if you will, to 2 Samuel. Samuel establishes his kingdom, and by the time we get to 2 Samuel 10, he's become relatively powerful. And so in 2 Samuel chapter 10, David desires to make peace with the new king of Ammon because his father had been a benefactor to David. And so read, if you will, in verse 1. "Now it happened afterwards that the king of the Ammonites died, and Hanun his son became king in his place. So David said, 'I will show kindness to Hanun the son of Nahash, just as his father showed kindness to me.' So David sent some of his servants to console him concerning his father. But when David's servants came to the land of the Ammonites, the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanun their lord, 'Do you think that David is honoring your father because he has sent consolers to you? Has David not sent his servants to you in order to search the city, to spy it out and overthrow it?' So Hanun took David's servants and shaved off half of their beards and cut off their garments in the middle as far as their hips and sent them away. When they told it to David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly humiliated. And the king said, 'Stay at Jericho until your beards grow, then return.' Now when the sons of Ammon saw that they had become odious to David, the sons of Ammon sent and hired the Arameans of Beth Rehob and the Arameans of Zobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Maacah with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob with 12,000 men. When David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the army, the mighty men. The sons of Ammon came out and drew up in battle array at the entrance of the city, while the Arameans of Zobah and of Rehob and the men of Tob and Maacah were by themselves in the field. Now when Joab saw that the battle was set against him in front and in the rear, he selected from all the choice men of Israel and arrayed them against the Arameans. But the remainder of the people he placed in the hand of Abishai, his brother, and he arrayed them against the sons of Ammon. He said, 'If the Arameans are too strong for you, then you shall help me. But if the sons of Ammon are too strong for you, then I will come to help you. Be strong. Let us show ourselves courageous for the sake of our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what is good in his sight.' So Joab and the people who were with him drew near to the battle against the Arameans, and they fled before him. When the sons of Ammon saw that the Arameans fled, they also fled before Abishai and entered the city. Then Joab returned from fighting against the sons of Ammon and came to Jerusalem. When the Arameans saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they gathered themselves together, and Hadadezer sent and brought out the Arameans who were beyond the river, and they came to Halem, and Shobak, the commander of the army of Hadadezer, led them. Now, when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and crossed the Jordan and came to Halem. And the Arameans arrayed themselves to meet David and fought against him. But the Arameans fled before Israel, and David killed 700 charioteers of the Arameans and 40,000 horsemen and struck down Shobach, the commander of their army, and he died there. When all the king's servants of Hadadezer saw that they were defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Arameans feared to help the sons of Ammon anymore. So the new king Hanan refuses and humiliates David's messengers, then hires a mercenary Aramean army to contend with David. Joab is sent to fight them and splits his forces between himself and Abishai, showing at least a basic understanding of military tactics. Joab was not a fool. He wasn't going to let himself get hit from behind and from the front. He calls upon his brother, and I think this is interesting. He calls upon his brother to be strong and let us show ourselves courageous for the sake of our people and for the cities of God. And may the Lord do what is good in his sight. I think that's an interesting passage. We're going to come back to that. So the Israelites win the battle, and David finishes off the Arameans. The Arameans are no longer a threat. And then in the next chapter, we're probably not thinking of chapter 11 as the fight against the Ammonites, but that's actually going to be the setting of this first part. In verse 1, it says, "Then it happened in the spring, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. And they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David stayed at Jerusalem." So right after this battle with the Ammonites and the Arameans, Joab leads Israel against the rest of the sons of Ammon and besieges this city of Rabbah. Well, this is the time where David stays back. He does not go to the front lines with his men, but he instead stays in Jerusalem. And so let's read these couple of verses that are associated with Joab. Obviously, this is David's great sin with Bathsheba. I don't want to read the whole passage. I think we're relatively familiar with this. I want to instead look at Joab's role in this sin. And so in verse 6, we jump down. "David sent to Joab, saying, 'Send me Uriah the Hittite.'" So Joab sent Uriah to David. No questions asked. He sends the man to David. Then jumping down to verse 14. "Now in the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it off by the hand of Uriah. He had written in the letter saying, 'Place Uriah in the front line of the fiercest battle and withdraw from him so that he may be struck down and die.' So it was as Joab kept watch on the city that he put Uriah at the place where he knew there were valiant men. And the men of the city went out and fought against Joab, and some of the people among David's servants fell, and Uriah the Hittite also died. Then Joab sent and reported to David all the events of the war. He charged the messenger saying, 'When you have finished telling all the events of the war to the king, and if it happens that the king's wrath rises and he says to you, "Why did you go so near the city to fight? Did you not know that they would shoot from the wall? Who struck down Abimelech, the son of Jerushabeth? Did not a woman throw an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebez? Why did you go so near the wall?" Then you shall say, "Your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also." So the messenger departed and came and reported to David all that Joab had sent him to tell. The messenger said to David, "The man prevailed against us and came out against us in the field, but we pressed them as far as the entrance of the gate. Moreover, the archers shot at your servants from the wall. So some of the king's servants are dead, and your servant Uriah the Hittite is also dead." Then David said to the messenger, "Thus you shall say to Joab, 'Do not let this thing displease you, for the sword devours one as well as another. Make your battle against the city stronger and overthrow it, and so encourage him.'" So Joab sends Uriah without question, sends Uriah back to David. There's no account that Joab questions this order to kill Uriah. Uriah the Hittite is one of the mighty men frequently listed in the annals of David. This was a comrade of Joab. This was a man that Joab would have known well, probably was even a friend of Joab. But he unquestioningly obeys the orders to kill Uriah, and not only does this, but also sacrifices other men, other sons of Israel, to accomplish David's will. And he receives no rebuke from David, despite the death of additional Israelites. Let's keep on reading in 2 Samuel 14. After the sin with Bathsheba, David is a different man. And so the rest of his tale of the kingdom, he's not the great king that has previously fought his enemies and who has been so conquering of the enemies of God. David is not the same man. And I think we see this reflected in his relationship with Joab. And so we know that after Nathan rebukes David, the first son of David and Bathsheba dies, and then Solomon is born. Well, the next chapter in chapter 13 is the sin of Amnon and Tamar, which is where David's oldest son, Amnon, takes his sister Tamar in unlawful ways and rapes her. After that, Absalom, his David's second son, kills Amnon, and then he's gone off into exile. So read if you will in 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 1. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was inclined toward Absalom. So Joab sent to Tekoa and brought a wise woman from there and said to her, "Please pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning garments now, and do not anoint yourself with oil, but be like a woman who has been mourning for the dead many days. Then go to the king and speak to him in this manner." So Joab put the words in her mouth. Now when the woman of Tekoa spoke to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and prostrated and said, "Help, O king." And she goes into this dialogue and she gives this hypothetical situation where two brothers have struggled against one another and one has died and the one that has left is now being pursued by the avenger of blood. And so David says, "Well, your house should not fall, and so this one son shall be spared." The one of Tekoa says, "Well, why then are you doing the opposite in the case of Israel?" And so read, if you will, in verse 18. In verse 18, "Then the king answered and said to the woman, 'Please do not hide anything from me that I am about to ask you.' And the woman said, 'Let my lord the king please speak.' So the king said, 'Is the hand of Joab with you in all this?' And the woman replied, 'As your soul lives, my lord the king, no one can turn to the right or to the left from anything that my lord the king has spoken. Indeed, it was your servant Joab who commanded me. And it was he who put all these words in the mouth of your maidservant. In order to change the appearance of things, your servant Joab has done this thing. But my lord is wise, like the wisdom of the angel of God, to know all that is in the earth.'" And so let's keep reading. "Then the king said to Joab, 'Behold, now I will surely do this thing. Go therefore and bring the young man Absalom.' Joab fell on his face to the ground, prostrated himself, and blessed the king. Then Joab said, 'Today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, O my lord the king, and that the king has performed the request of his servant.' So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. However, the king said, 'Let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face.' So Absalom turned to his own house and did not see the king's face." And so David technically fixes the situation. He brings Absalom back, but he doesn't reconcile with Absalom. They're still separate. They're still not seeing each other. And so for 2 years, they're not going to see each other. Continue with me, if you will, skipping down to verse 28. "Now Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem and did not see the king's face. Then Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. So he sent again a second time, but he would not come. Therefore he said to his servants, 'See, Joab's field is next to mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire.' So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose, came to Absalom at his house, and said to him, 'Why have your servants set my field on fire?' Absalom answered Joab, 'Behold, I sent for you, saying, Come here, that I may send you to the king, to say, Why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me still to be there. Now therefore, let me see the king's face, and if there's iniquity in me, then let him put me to death.' So when Joab came to the king and told him, he called for Absalom. Thus he came to the king and prostrated himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom." So Joab perceives that David wishes for his son's return. David's not being an effective king right now because he misses his son. And so he sends this wise woman from Tekoa to speak to the king. David sees through Joab's deception, but agrees to bring back Absalom on the condition that he goes to his own house and does not see the king. One of the things about the Bible is you can't really read how people said things. But I imagine Joab was a little surprised, maybe annoyed, when he says, "Why did your servant set my field on fire?" That would personally bother me, that was your best way of getting attention. But so Absalom sets Joab's field on fire to get his attention. So Joab meets with Absalom and gets David to meet with his estranged son. Well, we know from 2 Samuel 15, we're not going to read through this, but Absalom revolts. He turns the kingdom against David, and David has to flee for his life from the city. Joab stays loyal to David and joins him in exile. We then pick up in 2 Samuel chapter 18 towards the end of this civil war. And so we start reading in 2 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 1. It says, "Then David numbered the people who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. David sent the people out, one third under the command of Joab, one third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third under the command of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the people, 'I myself will surely go out with you also.' But the people said, 'You should not go out. For if we indeed flee, they will not care about us. Even if half of us die, they will not care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore now it is better that you be ready to help us from the city.' Then the king said to them, "Whatever seems best to you, I will do." So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went out by hundreds and thousands. The king charged Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom." And all the people heard when the king charged all the commanders concerning Absalom. Then the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle took place in the forest of Ephraim. The people of Israel were defeated there before the servants of David, and the slaughter there that day was great, 20,000 men. For the battle there was spread over the whole countryside, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. Now Absalom happened to meet the servants of David, for Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak. And his head caught fast in the oak, so that he was left hanging between heaven and earth, while the mule that was under him kept going. When a certain man saw it, he told Joab and said, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak." Then Joab said to the man who had told him, "Now behold, you saw him. Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." The man said to Joab, "Even if I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver in my hand, I would not put out my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, 'Protect for me the young man Absalom. Otherwise, if I had dealt treacherously against his life, and there is nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof.'" Then Joab said, "I will not waste time here with you." So he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And 10 young men who carried Joab's armor gathered around and struck Absalom and killed him. Then Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained the people. They took Absalom and cast him into a deep pit in the forest and erected over him a very great heap of stones. And all Israel fled, each to his tent. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself a pillar which is in the king's valley. For he said, "I have no son to preserve my name." So he named the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's Monument to this day. So Joab is given command over a third of the army, and despite orders to spare him, Joab personally kills Absalom when he gets stuck in a tree. Then in the next chapter, in the first couple of verses, 19 and verse 1, "Then it was told Joab, 'Behold, the king is weeping and mourns for Absalom. The victory that day was turned to mourning for all the people, for the people heard it said that day, the king is grieved for his son.' So the people went by stealth into the city that day as people who are humiliated steal away when they flee in battle. The king covered his face and cried out with a loud voice, 'O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son.' Then Joab came into the house of the king and said, 'Today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants, who today have saved your life and the life of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, by loving those who hate you and by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now." Joab reproves David's mourning very quickly over Absalom, saying, "That man was a rebel. We faithfully served you, and you have shown that you cared more for the dead son than you cared for your living servants." One of the second to last things we see in the next chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 20, after David has restored his king, and so he's starting to build his kingdom back up, shortly thereafter, we read in verse 1 of 2 Samuel chapter 20, "Now a worthless fellow happened to be there whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew the trumpet and said, 'We have no portion in David, nor do we have inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel.' So all the men of Israel withdrew from following David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah remained steadfast to their king from the Jordan even to Jerusalem. Then David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took 10 women, the concubines whom he had left to keep the house, and placed them under guard and provided them with sustenance, but did not go into them. So they were shut up until the day of their death, living as widows. Then the king said to Amasa," and brief side note here, Amasa was the commander of the forces of Absalom. And so to help reunite Israel and Judah, he brings together Amasa, and he actually gives Amasa command over all of his armies. In other words, replacing Joab, who has lost favor with David, with Amasa. And so Amasa, interestingly enough, is the son of Abigail, who we said Zeruiah was David's sister. Abigail is David's other sister. So Amasa is another nephew of David. Let's keep reading. "So then the king said to Amasa, 'Call out the men of Judah for me within 3 days, and be present here yourself.' So Amasa went to call out the men of Judah, but he delayed longer." But he delayed longer than the set time which he had appointed him. And David said to Abishai, "Now Sheba, the son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him so that he does not find for himself fortified cities and escape from our sight." So Joab's men went out after him, along with the Cherethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty men. And they went out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. When they were at a large stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them. Now Joab was dressed in his military attire, and over it was a belt with a sword in its sheath fastened at his waist. And he went forward, it fell out. Joab said to Amasa, "Is it well with you, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. But Amasa was not on guard against the sword which was in Joab's hand, so he struck him in the belly with it, and poured out his inward parts on the ground, and did not strike him again, and he died. Then Joab and Abishai his brother pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now there stood by him one of Joab's young men, and said, "Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab." But Amasa lay wallowing in his blood in the middle of the highway. And the people saw that all the people stood still. He removed Amasa from the highway into the field and threw a garment over him where he stood, that everyone who came by him stood still. As soon as he was removed from the highway, all the men pursued on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. And so Amasa, as I had said, the military commander of Absalom's armies, was appointed head over all the armies to reconcile Judah and Israel. But when he's called to battle against Sheba's rebellion, Amasa is slow to respond and does not meet the deadline that David had set for him to gather. And so Joab marches with his brother Abishai to find Amasa, and upon finding him, murders him, leaves him wallowing in his blood, and marches off while he's still dying. The rest of the chapter contains the story of him pursuing Sheba to Abel Beth Maka and besieges the city. And a woman from the city cries out and says, "Why do you keep besieging us?" And so he very benignly says, "Well, if you throw me the head of Sheba, then I'll let up the siege." They throw the head of Sheba out to him, and so Joab lifts the siege. Then one of the last things we read, we'll read this in the account of 1 Chronicles instead of 2 Samuel. Turn over, if you would, to 1 Chronicles chapter 21. We read the account towards the end of his life after David has battled against the Philistines. He's starting to become older. He's starting to be less effective. He has a census taken. And so in 1 Chronicles chapter 21, in verse 1, it says, "Then Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel. So David said to Joab and to the princes of the people, 'Go, number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan, and bring me word that I may know their number.' Joab said, 'May the Lord add to his people 100 times as many as they are. But my lord the king, are they not all my lord's servants? Why does my lord seek this thing? Why should he be a cause of guilt to Israel?' Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Therefore Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem. Joab gave the number of the census of all the people to David, and all Israel were 1,100,000 men who drew the sword. And Judah was 470,000 men who drew the sword. But he did not number Levi and Benjamin among them, for the king's command was abhorrent to Joab." So David desires a census of the land as presented to him by Satan himself, interestingly enough. Joab initially refuses, but the word of the king prevails over Joab, but he still refuses to number Benjamin and Levi. We're starting to see more and more rebellion against the word of David and Joab. Well, this is going to come to a culmination in 1 Kings chapter 1. The son of David, Adonijah, is going to rebel against the king, and David at this point is an old man. He's infirm. He can't even keep himself warm at night, and so his son, Adonijah, is going to proclaim himself king. In 1 Kings chapter 1, starting in verse 5. 1 Kings chapter 1, starting in verse 5. "Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, 'I will be king.' So he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen with 50 men to run before him. His father had never crossed him at any time by asking, 'Why have you done so?' And he was also a very handsome man, and he was born after Absalom. He had conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abiathar the priest, and following Adonijah, they helped him. But Zadok the priest, Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, Nathan the prophet, Shimei, Rei, and the mighty men who belonged to David were not with Adonijah. Adonijah sacrificed sheep and oxen and fatlings by the stone of Zoheleth, which is beside En-Rogel. And he invited all his brothers, the king's sons, and all the men of Judah, the king's servants. But he did not invite Nathan the prophet, Benaniah the mighty men, and Solomon his brother." Nathan the prophet very quickly realizes that this is going to result in the death of all those who do not support Adonijah. Joab has defied David's command, has put Adonijah in charge of the kingdom. The priesthood of Abiathar has sided with Adonijah. And so Nathan realizes they have to act very quickly. And so Nathan, Zadok, Benaniah, and Bathsheba convince David to put Solomon on the throne. Then read, skipping down to verse 38. In verse 38 of 1 Kings chapter 1, it says, "So Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, the Cherethites and the Pelethites went down and had Solomon ride on King David's mule and brought him to Gihon. Zadok the priest then took the horn of oil from the tent and anointed Solomon. So they blew the trumpet and all the people said, 'Long live King Solomon.' All the people went up after him and the people were playing on flutes and rejoicing with great joy, so that the earth shook at their noise. Now Adonijah heard, and all the guests who were with him heard it as they finished eating. When Joab heard the sound of the trumpet, he said, 'Why is the city making such an uproar?' While he was still speaking, behold, Jonathan the son of Abiathar the priest came. Adonijah said, 'Come in, for you are a valiant man, and bring good news.' But Jonathan replied to Adonijah, 'No, our Lord King David has made Solomon king. The king has also sent with him Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, the Cherethites and the Pelethites, and they have made him ride on the king's mule. Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet have anointed him king in Gihon, and they have come up from there rejoicing, so that the city is in an uproar. This is the noise which you have heard. Besides, Solomon has even taken his seat on the throne of the kingdom. Moreover, the king's servants came to bless our Lord King David, saying, May your God make the name of Solomon better than your name, and his throne greater than your throne.' And the king bowed himself on the bed. The king has also said thus, 'Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who has granted one to sit on my eye today while my own eyes see it.' Then all the guests of Adonijah were terrified, and they arose and each went on his way." Joab, the old warrior, recognizes, and is the first one to do so, he recognizes that something is amiss. And so after news of Solomon's crowning, Joab flees with all the other guests. So Solomon is made king. Adonijah ends up being spared by his brother in an act of mercy after Adonijah holds on to the horns of the altar of God. And all these men are spared for the moment. But in 1 Kings chapter 2, David starts to charge his son Solomon with certain deeds that he wants him to do. And in verse 5 of 1 Kings chapter 2, he says, "Now you also know what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me, what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner, and to Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed. He also shed the blood of war in peace, and he put the blood of war on his belt about his waist and on his sandals on his feet. So act according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace." David orders Solomon to kill Joab in revenge for Abner and Amasa. After Adonijah's death, Joab is going to flee to the tent of the Lord, which we'll pick up in verse 28. "Now the news came to Joab, for Joab had followed Adonijah, although he had not followed Absalom. And Joab fled to the tent of the Lord and took hold of the horns of the altar. It was told King Solomon that Joab had fled to the tent of the Lord, and behold, he is beside the altar. Then Solomon sent Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, saying, 'Go, fall upon him.' So Benaniah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, 'Thus the king has said, come out.' But Joab said, 'No, for I will die here.' And Benaniah brought the king word again, saying, 'Thus spoke Job, and thus he answered me.' The king said to him, 'Do as he has spoken, and fall upon him and bury him, that you may remove from me and from my father's house the blood which Joab shed without cause. The Lord will return his blood on his own head, because he fell upon two men more righteous and better than he, and killed them with the sword, while my father David did not know it. Abner the son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa the son of Jether, commander of the army of Judah. So shall their blood return on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. But to David and his descendants and his throne and his house may there be peace from the Lord forever.' Then Benaniah the son of Jehoiada went up and fell upon Job and put him to death. And Joab was buried at his own house in the wilderness. The king appointed Benaniah the son of Jehoiada over the army in his place, and the king appointed Zadok the priest in place of Abiathar." So Benaniah, one of Joab's longtime companions, is one who finally puts an end to Joab on the very horns of the altar of God. What an interesting character. How do you describe a man like Joab? I think too often he's portrayed as this scheming, self-serving man who just wants his own power, and so he disregards everything David said, but I think that's oversimplifying this man. Joab is not a mighty man. He's not a man gifted with great skill in battle. He doesn't kill 1,000 Philistines or kill a giant, but he is bold. He is brave. He is the first man to charge into Jerusalem to face the enemy. He is willing to fight for his king and for his country. He is skilled in warfare. He is able to defeat many enemies before the Lord and before David. Ultimately, Joab is loyal to the kingdom. And this is what I want to talk about with Joab. Joab did what was right for the kingdom. Joab killed Abner, a traitor, who probably would have betrayed again. He killed Absalom, who was a threat to the kingdom and had shown he could not be spared. He had killed Amasa, who had not responded to the call of King David and had shown himself a traitor. And he refused to listen to the king's command when the king's command went against God. But Joab showed his belief in God. And I think this is interesting. When he fights before the Ammonites and the Arameans, he says to his brother to remember God, "May the will of the Lord take place." But ultimately, we are not called to do the right thing for a cause. We are called to do the godly thing. And this is where I believe Joab fails. Joab, in his pursuit of loyalty to the kingdom and to the house of David, forgets that his first and foremost responsibility is not to David, is not to Israel, but it is to God. In his pursuit of trying to bolster the kingdom, of trying to ensure that David stays strong, he does not follow the will of God. This is what I want us to take from Joab. Oftentimes, I think we look to do what is right. What is right as a citizen of America. What is right to do as a good person. What is right to do for our families. What is right for us to do financially. What is responsible. But I think we forget sometimes that our ultimate goal in life must be to be holy before God. And that may mean doing things that are not convenient, that do not forward our own cause here on this earth. We are not called to be right in the sight of men. We are called to be godly. Joab believed in God. He clung to the horns of God's altar as he was dying. He professed his belief in God. But his faith in God did not translate into godly action. So the question for us today, will your faith in God translate to godly action? It's not enough to say you believe. It's not enough to say, "May the Lord's will be done." Even the demons believe and shudder. We have to be faithful to God. Joab's an interesting character. He's a man of skill, he's a man of war, and he's a man of the kingdom, but ultimately he failed in the sight of God. And he was sent down to Sheol in blood. So the question for us remains, are we going to be faithful to God? And is that faith going to produce action? For those of you who have not taken the first step, understand that the first step of being faithful to God and taking action for God is saying that I believe in God's will and I am going to respond. And that response is the watery grave of baptism. The descendant of King David came, and he came as a servant. He came to die for you and me. And his blood now leads us down a path of repentance and eventually glorification. Will you take the first step? Will you be baptized in the name of Christ? Or if you have been a soldier of God, if you are a veteran like Joab, and like Joab, you have started to lose faith because Joab saw that King David was not the man that he used to be. Are you not the man you used to be? Have you forgotten your first love? Have you forgotten what it meant to serve in the army of the Lord? Well, unlike Joab, you can come back. You can come back to the army of the Lord, and you can once more be a servant of God. If there is anything we can do for you here, fellow soldiers, let us know while we stand and while we sing.